Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Good evening, paranormal lovers. My name is Ra, and I'm reporting from the subterranean lair of the Mystical Spiral Radio. If you're looking to listen to the best paranormal discussions this side of the Kuiper Belt, then tune in every Friday from 8 to 9 p.m. and awaken to the beauty of your own consciousness. That's Fridays, 8 p.m. Eastern. Let the Para-X Radio Network upgrade your gray matter. Spiral out.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you again for listening to a special episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the writer, producer, and host of this show. Tonight, I have the privilege of interviewing Miss Brandi Woods. Brandi's experiences with the paranormal goes way beyond what most of us cannot do, which is sense, communicate with, and attempt to help those stuck in our world to simply move on. Brandi brings to the show an interesting perspective, especially about the soul work she does, that in most skeptics' eyes defies naturalistic events occurring around us. A little bit about Brandi. Brandi is an award-winning visual illustrator who specializes in Native American inspired and fantasy themes. She enjoys painting and sculpture. And while she doesn't personally have status, a distant grandmother of hers was a full-blooded Chaka. Her mother's lifelong interest in Native culture inspired Brandi to have a deep love and respect for the First Nations. Brandi graduated with honors from Dawson College's prestigious illustration and design program. She grew up in Louisiana and spent much of her childhood reading numerous books on mythology, shamanism, fantasy, and other cultures. She is not only an illustrator of books for children and adults, but she also does soul work where she creates paintings or illustrations for people of visions that come to her, similar to that of a psychic reading, but done by actually illustrating. We will talk more about her soul work and personal experiences with the paranormal during the show. In speaking with Brandi about some of her paranormal experiences, two questions have come to my mind. Why do you think spirits are drawn to you, Brandi, and how does your soul work help those in need around you? More on those questions in a moment. For now, let's welcome Brandi to the show. Brandi, welcome. How are you today?
I am great. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Brandi and I are Skyping this evening, so I'll do my best to raise the volume and improve the quality of sound, as these types of interviews can be somewhat challenging. However, we'll just roll with it and see what we get here. All right, Brandi, where might you be Skyping from?
I'm on the south shore of Montreal, which is in the province of Quebec in Canada.
Okay, very beautiful up there. If you ever get a chance to go traveling, try to get up to Canada, especially those areas. Very, very nice up there. And before I forget, most of you will probably be writing me and asking, how long have I known Brandi for and how did I meet her? Well, when I started writing my books on the paranormal, and I've got seven of them out right now on Amazon.com, Brandi, I sought her out through a higher type of program. And she intrigued me because her sketching and her work was just exceptionally spot on, and also very interesting, because I would give her just a paragraph of instructions, try to be as detailed as I could, and she would actually sketch out for me my situations, that it was almost like she was sitting in the room just knowing, or just being there with me, you know, when she sketches these out. And so I've always referred to her as someone who has a third eye, which is someone who can actually see like no other. So I've appreciated it. People have also commented that her sketch work, especially at depicting some of these difficult stories that I've lived through myself, excellent, excellent job. So we got to know each other a little bit, and she also reached out to me, and she was telling me about a couple situations that she has had, one of them which is in the book, and one of them, by the way, which has an excellent capture that she has done. We'll talk about that one in a moment. The story is called Cowboy in the Window. So more on that in just a moment. So let's get to Brandi here so I can stop mumbling. Brandi, let's start with just a basic question. At what age did you begin to notice that you had a gift in sensing or channeling the paranormal?
It probably would have been about when I was 3 years old, at least as far back as I can remember. We'd been looking at a house that my parents ended up, they bought it. And I remember standing between the real estate agent and my mom, and they were discussing details, and I was too young to really bother paying attention. And we were standing underneath an old attic hatch. I can't remember if it was open or closed. I think it might have been open. But so my mom and the lady were talking, and I got a very uncomfortable situation coming from that hatch. And that's about where my memory stops. I think I went back outside after that, played with a little balsa wood plane and some silly putty I had while the adults were, you know, conducting business. So they bought the house, and over time there were several events there that happened to my mother that I didn't even find out about until maybe a few years ago. And for my part, I often felt like something was like behind me when I was walking in the long narrow hallway, especially if the light was off, and I really didn't like that. And one time I was laying in bed at night and it was really dark, and I heard like somebody breathing in my ear, and that really freaked me out. The room with the hatch eventually got converted into my parents' bathroom, but for whatever reason, they never entirely finished it. And the hatch got filled in, brand new ceiling and all that. But if you were alone in that room, you could get a very creepy feeling in there sometimes, but it wasn't always, because sometimes our cats would sleep on a pillow near the window in there, and I know that cats are supposed to be sensitive to spirits, so it just sort of came and went. But I think living in that situation for so long caused me to kind of shut down my gifts for so many years, and they only recently started coming back.
Okay, I have a question for you about when you referred to the hatch. Did you say that when you say, was it the attic hatch? Do you mean like the something that's on top of the ceiling where you pull it down that actually leads up into an attic?
Yeah, it was like a square hole in the ceiling to go up into the attic.
Okay, because you know that a lot of times, and we all know this, we always hear of a lot of the spirits like to either hang out in, well, I just did a program on closets, but they like to hang out up in the attic. They like to hang down in the basement. And they also like to hang out in things like wardrobes and closets and stuff like that. So it doesn't surprise me that you would feel a little uneasy being under that. Most people, when they can't see something visually, they feel like they're a little bit creeped out because they want to have more control, like, you know, like what's behind the curtain kind of thing. But for the most part, I think that your gift and your sensing goes a little bit more beyond that. So, interesting. So, along that lines, have you ever figured out why spirits seem to be attracted to you? Let's go for that one.
I have suspicions, but nobody's ever actually appeared in front of me and said specifically why. I've always been attracted to shamanic work, even before I really knew what this was. And I've been reading about that. I had done a college paper about shamanism, and very interesting. Shamans are generally, they call it being called by the spirits. So they'll sort of go through like a sickness or something, or getting struck by lightning, something to show that the spirits are definitely interested in them. And if they can overcome this, then they become a shaman. So they work with the spirits very closely. And I have had psychic readings done, I've worked with some mediums, and they've told me that they have seen way more guides and animal helpers around me than they've seen with any other client. So I've also known in my own work that I have like quite a few animal totems around me. So one time I had asked them about this myself, and like in a meditation, and I had gotten the response that I shine. I had had an image of like a dark area and me sitting under something like a spotlight. Like spirits are just attracted to me for whatever reason. And I think on our land when I was a three, that there were like very, very many earth spirits or fairies or whatever you want to call them. I mean, we were out in the middle of nowhere, so perfect area for that.
When you were a three, though, where were you living at the time? Because people are going to wonder about where you were living when you saw these types of things.
In Louisiana. Well, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you're in touch with a lot of the investigations that are going on in Louisiana right now, but there seems to be an awful lot of people interested in searching in some of those backwoods or, you know, some of the areas. I've been down in Louisiana. I lived down there, actually, I think when I was about a year and a half, but I didn't know I was there, that type of thing, you know. And when I went back, I just, as an older individual, there is a lot of spiritual activity that happens down in Louisiana. So have you ever noticed over time that your abilities in being able to do this have either strengthened, or are you able to learn how to turn it off when you want some peace of mind? What's been happening to you over time here?
I'd say over the past 2 or 3 years that I've noticed that they're definitely getting a little bit stronger. My grandmother passed in 2011, and between me and speaking with my mother, she's also sensitive that my grandmother has very much been around us. And I think the presence of a loved one saying hello is making me realize initially that, okay, maybe not all spirits are that scary. And a few years ago, I also saw a shaman about a soul retrieval, and things started falling into place after that. It's sort of like a meditation where you will go in and they help you to find like lost memories from trauma that you've had in your lifetime. And this little part of yourself just sort of shuts itself away. And I'm also working with a medium right now that offers courses and meditations and such. So I'm really trying to explore what I can do with all this. And I haven't noticed I could really turn it off, because I'm an empath as well. And that can be really draining, but I'm learning how to keep my shields up, and that helps a bit.
So can you expand for us a little bit? The definition of empath is something that is a kind of a new terminology for a lot of people. When you talk about being an empath, how can you describe for us what you go through that makes you an empath?
An empath, as far as I understand, they had the book that came out a while back about the highly sensitive person. An empath is sort of a step above that. So I'm always sort of very high tuned. I'm very sensitive to sounds. I'm very sensitive when there's a bunch of people around. A lot of noise or a lot of people can really get on my nerves very easily. When I'm in crowds of people, I often feel like I'm being buffeted by energy. And it's just, I pick up people's emotions. I pick up people's stress. And a lot of times, I don't even realize that this is somebody else's emotions and they don't belong to me. But I recently learned this, and I'm learning to kind of keep myself surrounded in white light and push their energy back so that I'm just me and I'm not taking on their emotions as well.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I was asked on one of the radio shows when they interviewed me how I would describe my own abilities as an empath, and I have a really difficult time watching television shows or people that do their theatrics really, really well, because like when I was watching Westerns or even these shows that are crime related, I can feel myself. I can feel when like the bullet lodges into somebody's body, even if it's play acting, I can still feel it when it like enters into their body, or I can feel somebody when they're getting cut by a knife or something. And it's really bothering, because I can't watch stuff that's dramatic for me, because I relate completely with what you sense and pick up. I have a really hard time being in a room full of people as well, because I can feel a lot of the stuff going on around me, and it's just like, I don't know, like a major shutdown for me at times. So I believe that one of the things that you shared with me several months ago was that your mother is also sensitive, and of course you shared that today as well. But at what age now did you really come, though, to really realize that not only that, I know that you said at a very young age, at about 3, but was there an age that you just knew that it was so prominent in you that you just couldn't turn it off? And when you two are together, do you talk about it? Do you discuss it? Do your energies clash with each other? What's been your experiences with your mom?
Well, she's always been very spiritual, and she's always been very open-minded about a lot of things. I remember when I was 15, she was giving me some books on paganism that she'd had when she was a teenager. So she's always encouraged me to explore the subjects that interest me, and she's been open to talk about them and everything. I suppose we've always sort of talked, but I think recently in the past maybe 3 years when I started realizing, okay, yes, I'm an empath. Okay, yes, I'm sensing spirits. That's when we started really having a better back and forth discussion about this sort of thing. And at one point, I remember we'd had a discussion about our old house. And that's when I had found out about the things she had experienced back then. And so I guess I probably picked up on stuff here and there over the years, but it was only very recently that we actually started discussing it. And I know she picked up on my grandmother still being around well before I did. She's actually seen her with her naked eyes once or twice. Both of us have smelled my grandmother the way she smells. My mom has also sensed one of my uncles that has passed on as well once or twice. I can't really say that we enhance each other's abilities. I certainly don't think we clash with each other, but it's very nice to have that validation, that kind of like, did you feel that? It's like, yeah, I felt it too.
Yeah. So let's do that mother-daughter trip thing, and let's go into our first story here, which is the one that's in my book and the one that Brandy had captured an image in the kitchen window, which I'll let her talk to you about that. And so so here you are. You decide with your mother you want to get away for a weekend, and you decide to choose a cabin. I believe it was just outside of Deadwood, South Dakota, in a small town called Hill City. Brandy, what do you know about the history of Hill City, South Dakota?
Hill City. As far as I know, its roots goes back to the Black Hills mining era, which would have been around the 19th century or so. Reading about that area, the mining industry rather exploded. People started flocking to the area, rather to the dismay of the natives who the hills actually belonged to. There was a lot of political stuff trying to kick them out and everything because they wanted the gold. So the gold discovery opened the Black Hills up to mining, and miners settled near Hill City around 1876. And once the gold rush became well known in the Black Hills, miners vacated the area, making Hill City a ghost town. And I guess around 1883, the population revived itself because they discovered tin. And between the miners, cattle ranchers, and the railroad, the area became alive again with businesses drawing people back. A lot of the cattle ranchers lived within 40 to 70 miles around Hill City. And from what I understand, the land is rather expensive there. And these days, it's actually a pretty big visual arts community.
Interesting. So a couple of things stand out to me as you are mentioning Hill City. One is the metals in the earth, such as tin, possibly gold, maybe even some silver. Not sure about the silver, but definitely tin was discovered, which tells me a lot about unsettled energy wanting to find its riches. Okay, that means we're talking about these miners. And then what can happen if they, so let's say they have a terrible accident or they die, in one of the mines or whatever, which could imprint either within a mine or even imprint on the land. So I can imagine the chaos of people wanting to get there. You know what happens when someone says there's gold in those hills, they all start running, and then next thing you know it, you have chaos. But not along with chaos, as we all know, energy is brought along with that. And we also know that if any devastating events start to occur or things start to get a little unsettled, the environment starts to become imprinted. So Brandy, why don't you share with us how you came to notice this cowboy who showed up in that window in your cabin?
Well, my mom and I have always had a very keen interest in Native American culture, and we were attracted to the Black Hills area in general. Specifically, we had wanted to go see one of Brule's shows. They have them all over South Dakota in the summer. Brule is a pretty famous Native American music and dance group. They have about 20 albums out now, so they've been around for quite a while. So we wanted a nice little place to stay, see the show, explore the towns in the area for a few days, and soak up all the culture.
When did this trip occur?
It was around August 10th in 2015 when we decided to head up there.
And what were the conditions like when you were there?
What I remember, the air was cool, especially at night and in the morning. The days were pretty clear, the weather was great. There was a nice little stream just a few feet away from our cabin, and the area around us was rather open. There were trees. There was like the national forest was not too far, but they were pretty far back from the cabin.
Hmm. And so what's kind of a, so your mom and you get out there, you see this cabin, you're in kind of an expansive area. And so what were one of the first things that you did when you got into this cabin?
Well, one thing that we always do whenever we travel is we take a little bottle of spray liquid sage, and we'd spray this around the rooms, like hotel rooms. So we basically covered the entire cabin with this liquid sage, sort of to clear the energy, kind of like some people would do with holy water. So we do it with the sage. We don't burn the sage because, you know, the smoke, and some people are attaining to smoke, so we just spray to clear the energy. The cabin itself was very clean, very nice. There were no odd smells. It felt really peaceful. We actually ended up kind of getting a free upgrade because there were bees on our old cabin. So we were really excited when we first got in there. Very nice cabin. The next day we noticed there were a bunch of flies, but we were in the wilderness and it was summer. So what can you do about that? You know, during the evening though, I began to feel a little bit paranoid and uneasy, kind of a spirity nearby sort of feeling. And my mom and I could both sense something that was just off, but we couldn't put our finger on what it was. So we used up that entire bottle of liquid sage, and even that didn't really help. And the feeling got so strong that I didn't want to sleep alone in any of the rooms, especially the master bedroom, which is on the main floor. Kind of a shame because I actually kind of liked that bedroom. It was really nice, but something really didn't feel right in there. And my mom felt the same way, so we ended up sleeping upstairs in the loft with the television on, and I was on the couch. She was in a lazy boy with her feet up, and it was just really bad, that gut feeling you have when something doesn't feel quite right, and it never went away.
Mm-hmm. A question, I don't want to interrupt you, but there's something that hit me about 2 seconds ago. These things, you know, come periodically for me. The flies. The flies, yeah, that you talked about, and I know you had talked about it when we first, you know, started talking about your story a long time ago and stuff too. Do you suppose it's possible, because someone might ask, that could sage, do you think flies could possibly have been picked up on this sage smell at all? Or was it so contained with inside the building that there was like no way that the flies would even know that you sprayed it in there? Do you know the scent of it? Do you think that attracted the flies?
Actually, I think the flies may have been in there before we sprayed, but we tended to keep the doors and windows closed, so there's no way that they could have come in.
Yeah, I know there's another thing too, and I'd read this somewhere a long time ago, and I'm vaguely trying to recall this from memory, but I know that in the presence, and it's not always a demonic presence, because I know after the full review of this cowboy was harmless, and I know that, but it's interesting because there's a couple of things that will attract flies. One, if there's any type of, like they call it vegetation, you know, like plants outside decaying, sometimes that will attract flies. Sometimes other things that will track flies from a paranormal perspective, though, believe it or not, unless you can debunk that there's not a dead animal around your cabin or whatnot, is actually a spirit. And again, usually flies are attracted to the negative ones, but not this one that you and I had talked about. So I find that connection with the flies and this gentleman very, very interesting. But let's go further on this. So basically you're in your cabin, and then you're downstairs, right? No, you went upstairs.
We both went upstairs.
Yeah, and then did you stay upstairs the whole time that you were there on your trip?
No, we went down in the kitchen to cook. There was a little seating area in the living room, but the flies were so bad, so we went upstairs to the loft underneath the ceiling fan to eat at the little table up there.
Interesting.
And I tend to wake up in the night, and the only bathroom was downstairs. And so we left the lights on downstairs, and the bathroom, interestingly, had two doors, one to the main cabin and the other one adjoined to the master bedroom. And since I didn't like the master bedroom, I moved one of the chairs in there up against the bathroom door. I can't remember now if it opened end or out or if it even would have made a difference, but I was so paranoid about that. And even when I went down in the middle of the night, I was terrified, even with that chair, that that door was just going to creep open on me.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I've had that feeling. And I know Brandy enough to tell everyone that she, if she gets a creeped out feeling, and I mean, I can vouch for this even on my own accord, we're creeped out. And so, yeah, I'm surprised you guys didn't pack up and go, but I'm glad you had the spirit of staying. So you had this feeling of being watched. Okay, you're there. You're staying upstairs at night. You're doing your thing during the daytime. It felt pretty peaceful. But then you felt a really strong presence going on in there. And so what can you tell me about, I think you mentioned a stream when we first talked about this near your cabin. And most people do not realize that water sources actually help to manifest apparitions, especially if they died in the area. And it's because of the energy that's caused from the rustling of the stream. I don't know. I just know that anytime I've also been around streams and haunted areas, there's always been activity. So when did you start taking pictures in and outside the cabin when you actually captured this cowboy? When was that?
That would have been the next morning. Went outside to take some pictures of the cabin, the general area. The stream was nice, and it was pretty cool in the morning. So went out there, you know, no ulterior motives or anything at that time. I didn't even really believe in spirits, but so I was just taking the pictures. And maybe about a year later, we looked back, and the cowboy was very, very obvious in that photo. And I know we had looked at those pictures when we had gotten home from the trip, and he certainly was not there.
Yeah. That's what most people don't realize either. So for those of you listening to this, take pictures, especially if you think you're in a haunted place or location. Take pictures as you can. Don't expect anything to show up right away. Sometimes it can take up to a year for something to actually pop back into the image. And a lot of times people ask me, well, why is that? Why does it show up a year later or months later or whatnot? I can't answer that. I just know from my own self and taking pictures as well, I will go back to questionable situations that I thought might have been haunted, and I'll start looking in the windows, blowing them up. And thank God for laptops, because we can sit and blow up our pictures to our heart's content. You know, thank God for that. So, all right. So when Brandy sent me the cowboy picture, my process was to first start by basically looking around the area and looking in every window and all that. And when I debunk an image, what I do is I first look for things like shadows, tree leaves, dirt smudges, anything that might form a human face, which a lot of times it's interesting. You think you see something, but when you blow it up on your laptop, then all of a sudden you can kind of debunk it and realize that it was something else. The other thing that most people don't realize is that the way our brains are trained, we matrix. So what we do is we look for familiar things. And since faces is something that we look at all the time, when we're looking for things, our brain is saying, let's see if we can look for a face, okay? And so our brain is at work trying to matrix something. In the meantime, we're trying to find something. But when she had looked and actually captured that cowboy, one of the things that was really nice, why don't you tell us a little bit about how that cowboy looked, Brandy? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the first thing I noticed was the face, which, as you said, is because of the way our brain works. But if you look closer, he very clearly had a nice hat on. You could see a very detailed vest. You could see a shirt. You could basically see all the way down to his hips. This wasn't just a matrix face. This was very clearly the upper body of a man.
Yeah. And when I saw that picture, I have to say that if I had to put our pictures in a contest, I shot one of my great-great-aunt and great-great-grandfather in a screened window. Very, very clear image of both of them. Clear. And when I looked at Brandy's, I thought, I sure hope we're not entering a ghost picture contest, because honestly, I think, I don't know, I'd be out to win the gold here, but I will have to tell you, that cowboy looked pretty nice. You could tell his hat, you could even tell he was dressed nice. He looked like he was probably in his 20s or 30s, but we'll get into that age thing and as we go along, because I want to bring something up about age, especially when they show themselves to you. So, Brandy, what type of camera were you using when you captured that image in the window?
It was an old pocket digital camera that I'd had for a while. It was a Canon PowerShot SD780.
Okay, that's, digital. And a lot of times people will try to say, oh, you know, that was Photoshopped or whatever. It is very hard to Photoshop real images like what she and I have captured. And like I said, I don't know, this isn't a plug to buy the book, but buy the book and you'll see what I'm talking about, okay? Anyway, and give Brandy some credit here. Okay, most people might say that when they're in a place that they're not familiar with, that they always have a sense of paranoia. So here you are, you're in a place with your mom, you've got your strong person with you, it's pitch dark outside in the evening, you're in a small cabin in the middle of nowhere, but when it gets breezy, people might say, oh, did you hear things? I think people might want to know, did you ever hear things at night? Did you look out the window at night? Could you see anything? Did you hear anything hit against the cabin at all? Any sounds?
Not that I remember. No, there weren't any trees or anything nearby that would have actually hit the cabin.
Okay, so it was pretty quiet. One of the things that I always, which is an interesting thing too, I don't know how dead silent it was there, but usually when I'm in situations that are dead silent, people might think, oh, there's nothing here. On the contrary, chances are likely there might be something there, especially if you can say, gosh, it's just so dead silent, I just couldn't hear a thing. Well, you know what? Sometimes those are the most haunted situations, too. So what kind of takeaways do you have about that trip? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, to this day, I sometimes still kind of pause and realize that I took a photograph of a ghost.
And a mighty nice one, too, Brandy, by the way.
Yeah, true. But he did have that slightly creepy feeling. But at that point in time, like I said, I'm not even sure I really believed in ghosts. And I'd shut off my gifts for a while. And ghosts scared me. I don't believe in them. And then I see that picture. And compared with that feeling, I mean, that was irrefutable proof for me. It's like, okay, Brandy, spirit's real. You can't deny this. You took that picture yourself. So looking back now, after a bunch of stuff I've read, discussions with some friends I've had, I wish I'd known enough to try to cross the guy over. I mean, who knows how long he'd been stuck, and that may have been all he wanted.
Yeah, and sometimes they don't want to cross over if they're really attached to something like the land, because that gentleman, we don't know if he's buried near that cabin, or we don't know if he died tragically for whatever reason, or, you know, maybe he was also a miner and a cattle rancher combined. We don't really know the history of him, but boy, it would sure be interesting to try and figure that one out, because he looked really, really interesting. He didn't look scary, though. That's the one thing. You know, I was looking at that picture and I thought, you know, with between the feelings and the vibes that you had, and I at least you sensed that there was somebody there. That's right, but I think you had also mentioned to me you didn't really feel like you were in danger, right? Is that right?
No, it was just more a sense of presence that something is here that I can't see.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about a new situation that I'm fascinated by. I call this one the Creepy Skeleton House. Okay, so Brandy, correct me if I get some of this wrong here, but I think you've been walking past an abandoned house for a number of weeks or years, and now you've begun to notice this odd sensation every time you pass by this house. So can you first tell us what drew your interest specifically to this house and how you came to notice things more there?
Well, the house is kind of nearby to where I live, and we don't have a car, so we tend to walk everywhere. And one day I had happened to walk by, and I'd seen this house before. I mean, you know, it's all there all the time. I've been here for like 6-7 years, and it's always been kind of odd. It's run down. It's, for some reason, it's very close to the streets. It's like maybe 2 steps away from the sidewalk. So it's always kind of stood out because it seemed a little old and odd. But one night, I was walking past the house with my partner at night, and it hit me really, really strongly that I was being intensely paid attention to by a spirit. I mean, I could feel its full attention on me. Like, I broke into sweat and chills at the same time. I kind of lost my breath, and it was like, okay, that place is definitely haunted. So that my reaction even managed to convince my boyfriend, who's really a major skeptic.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of creepy, too, because you know how some people say, I walk by this house and I just can feel them staring at me through these windows? There's just sometimes a feeling that we get. So that's interesting. So you took a few pictures of the house and she sent them in to me. And what I do is I took a look at them through some of the filters. And it's interesting because there was one picture she was focusing on a lot and thought that she had captured something there. But what was real interesting is the skeleton face wasn't in the window that she was focusing on. The skeleton face was actually in the window across the way. And so what I do when I filter images is there's certain things that I look for, and then I start to debunk things, I start to remove things, and then if the image holds true to its essence for several pictures, then I know that we've got a bingo here. And so what this one looked like was, which is interesting, and it brings us to a whole new thought process here. It looked very much like a skeleton face. Okay, so clear as day, eye sockets, nose, mouth, just too perfect to deny that it was a human face. You know, some people might say, oh, your mind matrixing again, your brain is turning that into a human face. But unfortunately, filters, especially the ones I use, they don't lie. So this is interesting. So Brandy had asked me a question, and the question was, do you think that these entities or spirits or whoever might be in that house, do you think that they recognize me and they know me? Okay, so the answer to that question is, if you visit a place enough over time, they will get to know you, but there is a little bit of a danger involved in being noticed or having your attention notice something. Because I know that when I was doing a lot of research on my great-grandparents' house, the one where I captured the images, the minute I captured those images, I was absolutely fascinated in wanting to capture more. And I caught a significant amount of evidence in that house and also in the barn on their property. But I also had contacted at one point a psychic who was very, very good in knowing who these spirits were. And she had told me, she said, they know who you are. They want you to leave them alone. You've been, you know, hanging around long enough. You're annoying them, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so now that I know that they know that I know that they're there, and Brandy, now that it knows, she knows, he knows, that you know that they're there, they're also going to be paying a little bit more attention to you. So where do we go from here? So the one thing that I want to make sure of that you don't get trapped into is that if they notice you too much, if they start to play mind games with you. And I'll give you an example. Sometimes when want to have a family member contact us, and let's say we think that a family member who has passed over has contacted us. Sometimes if it's not necessarily a shapeshifter, but someone who is more negative or demonic, they might try to shapeshift themselves into a kind face, a gentle face or whatnot, just to lure us in a little bit. And then what they want to do is they want to suck the living energy out of us. That's basically what it is. They want to attach and start drawing our energy and start messing with our minds. So you have to be really careful about whether or not you really are dealing with a little girl, a little boy, a grandparent, a nice person, because you really don't know who, if they're a shapeshifter, and they could possibly be more of a demonic, okay? For you, Brandy, though, and I want you to tell us just a little bit more about this skeleton face. So tell us just a little bit more about what you've been doing outside that house and what your experiences have been. What have they been?
Honestly, I wasn't going there specifically to try to take pictures or debunk or anything after I had had that very obvious point of contact, we'll call it. I continued on where I was going, and then when I came back maybe 30, 45 minutes later, I decided to snap a few more pictures when I was walking, and that was the first set that I had sent you, and then I know a few days ago I had done the same thing. I just happened to walk by the house. And on the way back, I happened to snap a few more pictures, and that was when I had captured the recent image.
Yeah. And the one other question she had asked me is, why is this individual entity, apparition, you know, disembodied person, why are they showing themselves as a skeleton face and not a face like she and I had captured in, you know, in our other situations? And I really don't have a good answer for that, but it leads us into possibly not wanting to be recognized, or possibly wanting to, I don't know, maybe they're trying to give you a hint about something, like maybe they're buried under the house or in the walls and this is the form that they are now or something like that. I will go back briefly, though, to the cowboy. And I will go briefly back to the little girl and the man that I captured in my window. When they showed themselves to me, the little girl and the man, they looked much younger than how they had passed. So the little girl, she passed at about 10, and she showed herself to me about 6 to 8 years old. And the older man, who I believe is my great-great-grandfather, he passed around, I think he was around 80, and he showed himself to be somewhere in his 70s. Now, the cowboy image that you shot or captured, he looked like he was in his 20s or 30s, but we don't know the history yet of this guy. Do you have any take, Brandy, on why they might appear younger than they actually are?
I believe that they can rather appear as they like once they're in spirit form. As you said, some of them can try to imitate someone else. So I believe that, you know, maybe they prefer an age when they recognize themselves more before they dealt with an illness or however they died. My grandmother, similarly, when she showed up in my dreams a few times, and when my mom has seen her, she was maybe a decade or so younger than when she died as well. And I do kind of wonder if maybe the skeleton face might be more of like an energetic imprint. So you have several people that happen to die there, but you've got more experience with that kind of thing than I do.
Not with skeleton faces. This is the first I've ever seen, but thanks for challenging my day, okay? I'll be looking into that, but I don't know if I'll ever come up with a good answer. I may have to divert to some of these really hard, these individuals, these investigators that really, really delve into this stuff to see if I can even find an answer for you and me on that. Let's talk a little bit about your soul work, because that's something that most people aren't familiar with, and the concept of it is actually relatively new. So why don't you explain to us a little bit about what soul work is?
Well, I do spirit guide portraits for one, spirit guides, animal totems. That was my main interest initially, being able to see people's spirit guides, especially my own, and being able to draw them. I thought that would be a really cool thing to be able to do. And in exploring that, looking for teachers, I discovered completely par hasard that I could do what I ended up calling soul portraits. They're very symbolic. Some have animals, some have guides. I've had some be like a tree or a waterfall. They're very floaty, dreamlike energy. They're all different. I never know what's going to show up on the page. I focus in on the person's energy. I ask their spirit guides in mind to help me connect, get clear imagery, get any messages that need to come through for them right then. And I sort of see in my mind's eye and a little bit on the paper when I draw, and the picture just sort of evolves as I go. So what comes through always seems to be what the person needs to see then, because I've had repeat clients and the images will be different every time. It's always very powerful, very moving. I've had a few people being moved to tears before, and I'm personally drawing stuff that doesn't really mean anything to me, but it means worlds to the other person. So we're really not used to seeing ourselves that way. So it's like a visual reconnection with your own inner light and power, yourself as an eternal spirit. And when people's guides give me messages and such, it's all very intuitive. It makes a very great focus for meditation and such.
Well, I have to tell you, the sketchwork that you've done for me, especially all those images, she's done quite a few of them for me in my books. I have always bragged about you to everybody that your ability to understand so few details but actually capture the situation so perfectly is absolutely remarkable. And you've got a true gift, especially when it involves this. So I hope that wherever you might go or participate in doing this, I hope that it catches on with people a little bit, because it's really quite interesting. I believe you mentioned when able that you participate in some shows or events. Will you be participating in any events in the near future? Maybe those that are listening might want to come and see you.
I might be at the Salon Entre Deux Mondes. It's very French here, so that means something like the exposition between two worlds. That's this October here in Montreal, but I'm not sure yet. I haven't committed to anything. I am open 24/7. I do distance readings by email, so people can send me their full name and their photo, and I'll do the drawing and a reading for them, give them any information I receive. I also make shaman drums and painted feathers and animal totems. My site for that is spiritart.brandywoods.com. That's all one word, spiritart.brandywoods.com.
Great. Have you ever had a situation where it's difficult to do soul work for someone? And why do you think there might be a block, or what might cause some difficulty?
When I was first starting, especially, and when I feel under pressure, when I'm trying to force myself to get something, or if I've done a bunch in a row. I did one time, I was doing a reading out in front of a shop, and I had done like 7 in a day, and near the end of the day, I was getting very drained and trying to come up with some imagery and stuff. I do still sometimes have doubts about what I'm getting during a reading, but I try not to judge, just pass along what I get, take notes. And I've had some really incredible validations on what seems totally random stuff to me. So I'm learning to trust myself more, and I'm starting to get more and more information from my clients, too.
Oh, great. Okay, any final thoughts or takeaways from anything here?
Well, I believe that we come to Earth to learn, to challenge ourselves, stretch our comfort zones. And in hindsight, we can see all the little steps we took on our journey that sort of took us on a very specific path leading us to where we are today and who we are. Like, had I not worked with you on your books, it might have taken me a little bit longer to be at this point where I am spiritually today. I think it's about all being open to experiences, listening to your intuition, and finding the lessons therein and using them on your journey. I'm not sure what I'm meant to do with all these gifts right now, but it's going to be fun finding out.
Well, I think that you've got a lot of gifts to give people, and I think that as we all evolve, some of us are now just tapping into our intuition a little bit more as well, and some of us have it at a greater sense than others, and so that's one thing that I think that we all have a tendency to do is ignore sometimes the things around us or our own gut feelings and intuitions about things, and I don't know, I just find what you do a very useful gift, and I appreciate that. So as we wrap up this interview, I guess most people would like to know, what are some of your immediate goals for the future?
Well, the other day I had the idea that I think I might be doing an oracle card deck or two. I've got one of them, I've got most of the cards planned out, and the other one I have an idea for. I've got a bunch of side projects I need to get around to, including two drums that need painting. I'm also working on an independent video game, which is a visual novel called Love Eden, and probably eventually going to do a second coloring book. A while back, I had done one on fairies and unicorns, and sort of like self-love, positive self-reinforcement messages.
That sounds really, well, that sounds interesting. I think that that could really captivate a wider audience than just the general adults, too. So tell us again where we can find one or more of your books or a website where people can reach out to you either for your soul work or to view your books.
The soul work is spiritsart.brandywoods.com, or I have some of my books and some art prints on my Etsy store. That's brandywoods.etsy.com. Or you can just go to Etsy and search for Brandy Woods. I just finished up my fifth children's book for a Canadian publisher, but only one of those is out right now, and that one's in French, on La Naissance du Capteur de Rêve. It's about where the dream catcher legend came from, but the other ones will probably be out within the next year. Or people can email me at mail@brandywoods.com if they want more information on anything.
And I think that's mail, M-A-I-L, at Brandy, BrandyWoods, that's woods.com. So mail@brandywoods.com for more information about anything or to reach out to her about doing some soul work. Well, we thank you for being on the show this evening. You are definitely one of a kind, and for those lives that you have touched along the way, again, we appreciate everything that you have done, and of course, we thank you for that, too. Good luck with that creepy skeleton house there, Brandy. Once you figure out who or what is behind that window, you know, get back to me, and I'll see if I can do some more filtering for you, and maybe as time goes on, maybe that skeleton face might actually turn itself into a face. Who knows, right? And thank you for being a guest today, Brandy. Again, in the future, you learn of anything more, just get back in touch with me and we'll have you on again.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thanks again, Brandy. This concludes our interview.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time.
Be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and the company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or a Para-X Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, Para-X Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.